If you date a human, it might be good, it might be awkward, but at least if you don't click, you can wave goodbye outside the restaurant and never see them again. But if you adopt a dog, it might take months before it becomes clear that you are not right for each other and one of you might have to go. It's never going to be an easy decision, but if your couch is a ruin and your shoes are a distant memory and your neighbours glare at you because of the barking, you might need to rehome your dog. If you've ever had to find a new home for a pet, why did you feel you had to do it and how did it turn out? Now, Anna Kelsey Sugg went through this and she joins us on Life Matters today. Anna, welcome.
G'day.
Tell me about your dog, Mally. How soon was it before you realised something was up?
Oh, pretty quickly. So Mally was a beautiful little 9-month-old Collie Heeler Cross when we got her from a rescue dogs association. They told us that she'd been found in a box, emaciated, with a little brother who unfortunately had died. And we brought her home pretty traumatised, really anxious. She would drop to the floor if a bird flew past. She would flinch if you moved towards her too quickly. And slowly she gained confidence with us and got healthy and happy. And that's sort of when the problems kicked in.
So obviously before you brought her home, you put some thought into how you guys might work together. How did it play out differently from how you expected?
Yeah, we did put the thought in and the Rescue Dog Association really helped us. They asked us questions like, do you have space? Do you have a good sized yard? This was a sheepdog. Do you live an active lifestyle? Can you take the dog for plenty of walks? Do you have money if she needs to go to the vet? And we had sort of ticked all those boxes. So we were feeling pretty confident that we could give her the life she needed. But it just became apparent that she had much more energy than we had anticipated, and we would go even after a 2-hour walk, we would get home and she would cut laps in the backyard, and our backyard was just destroyed. And my partner's quite a keen gardener, and we had put up a fence around the veggie patch, and Mally still managed to get in and destroy the veggie patch, ate fruit trees, dug holes, there were potholes all over the yard. It was like an OHS high risk zone just walking to the clothesline. And she was waking us up in the night. She was eating our books, eating our clothes. She would nibble at the furniture so that every night we had to put chairs on top of couches just so that the couch could survive a little longer. And it just wasn't working. We were just so stressed out that we were ending up in tears at certain points.
So what did you try?
So we tried lots of things. We sent Mally to doggy school from pretty early on. We brought a trainer into our home. We had all sorts of contraptions set up in the backyard for the times that we weren't home for her to, you know, have to fiddle with something to get a little dog treat out. We brought dog friends around for play dates. My partner and my working schedules didn't completely overlap, so there was someone home almost all of the time, and it just still wasn't enough. We upped the walking times every day, and nothing we did seemed to work.
So what was the advice that you were getting?
Well, our families were pretty clear that something needed to change. They were very supportive of the idea of changing our lives. They were also very gentle about suggesting that we do something with our dog.
To consider
rehoming. Yeah. And then there was a point where the words were actually spoken out loud between my partner and myself. And it was a horrible moment. We couldn't believe we were saying the words out loud. But once we'd said it, that thought had implanted in our brain and we realised that was actually an option. We hadn't really considered that you could possibly do that before.
And I'm wondering if, you know, all the trainers you talk to and the shelter people, had they ever mentioned that there might be a disconnect between you of this magnitude, even though you ticked all the boxes?
Not really, no. Yeah. The emphasis seemed to be on doing that groundwork beforehand, you know, making sure that you ticked all those early boxes. And once we had, we felt like it was a sure thing. We knew people with sheepdogs in the suburbs who lived very happy lives with them, and we just thought that it would be like that for us too.
Yeah. And how did people react when you did get to the stage of going, okay, she's going to have to go?
Mixed reactions. So, yeah, like I said, our family were very supportive mostly. They saw, you know, how distressed we were, how tired we were, and that it just wasn't working. So they were mostly very supportive. Some friends, not so much so. So we did cop a bit of judgment from a couple of friends who sort of had the attitude that we were just ditching our dog and that we'd just given up and we were a bit lazy and not really putting in the effort that we needed to they had animals and lived in successful, happy lives with them, and they sort of assumed that we should be able to too, then it was something we were doing wrong, which was not a nice feeling.
No, how did it feel having to go through this emotional arc?
Yeah, well, we were already feeling very guilty about and feeling this sense of failure. So that really compounded that. And it just made us feel quite a strong sense of shame. We didn't want to tell people that we were, giving our pet up for adoption. We kind of found ourselves in the months after sort of skirting around that. If it came up, we would just say our dog's not with us anymore and sort of leave it at that. But, yeah, there's a lot of judgment. There was a decent amount of judgment.
Yeah. Well, and we'll hear more from Anna soon. But in the meantime too, let's hear from Mia Cobb. She's a human-animal interaction expert from the University of Melbourne and Deakin University. Mia, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, oh, it's a pleasure. How common is Anna's story?
Well, surprisingly, we know from some research that's been conducted in Australia that around about, depending on which local government pound or shelter that you're looking at, around about 15 to 30% of those animals in our pounds and shelters have been relinquished by their owners. So it's fairly common.
Do we know the reasons for that, whether it might be because of a forced change of circumstance or something like Anna's situation where it becomes clear that the dog is not happy and the owners are not happy?
Yeah, there was some great research done out of the Anthrozoology Research Group in Melbourne a few years ago, and they looked at all those reasons, and they basically break down to owner issues or animal issues. So the top ones are things like moving house, either moving interstate or overseas, or landlord won't allow is also a really high reason, where people's circumstances have changed and they're just unable to take their animals with them. And it's not just dogs that get relinquished. It's also cats and rabbits and even things like chickens and other parrots, companion birds as well. And also things like behavioural issues. So I think we can say what Anna was experiencing sounds like it falls clearly into the category of dog behaviour issues. Also things like owner health and illness or arrival of a new baby, so family changes. And then there's things like unable to afford either the expectations of what people thought having a puppy or a kitten was going to be like aren't met, or it could even be something like an unplanned litter of puppies or kittens and the person's found themselves with too many animals and they're unable to find homes for them themselves.
Well, and Alex from Sydney had a fairly similar experience to Anna's. Let's hear how it played out for him.
My husband and I adopted a beautiful 3.5-year-old greyhound named Marmalade last year. We had spent months researching the breed characteristics and thought she'd make a great addition to our home. But while she was a gorgeous girl who delighted in meeting new people, we found that she didn't really settle into city life, especially around smaller dogs and things like going to bed. I feel that my anxiety and her anxiety fed each other, and after 3 sleep-deprived weeks, we ended up returning her to the rescue kennel. I honestly felt like a failure. But I realised at the time that if we kept her only to avoid these feelings, it would continue to be too stressful for her and for us. Even months later, I still think about her and how she's doing every day.
And obviously, it's a really hard decision for a lot of people. Mia, what are the warning signs? Are there any warning signs that, you know, perhaps you and the dog are not going to get along once they've bedded down?
I think, both Anna and that person there just spoke about the fact that they felt this anxiety and that they gave it a really good time and effort and things weren't resolving. So I think there's probably, a bit of a stigma attached to relinquishing animals because historically we think about the dog-human relationship as being a static, unchanging one. But perhaps we need to rethink how that is. We know that animals and humans feel attachment for each other the same way that parents and children do. And that attachment can vary. So for some people, bringing an animal into the home is pretty much the same as bringing in a new family member, and they feel that level of dedication and responsibility to making it work, that they've made a lifetime commitment to this animal. Not everyone feels that way, so it is important to note that for other people, having animals is just kind of part of the landscape of their life, the same way that having a painting on the wall makes them feel at home, having an animal in the house makes them feel at home. So we do have different levels of attachment. But when it's not working out, perhaps we need to rethink about that sort of relationship as being a more dynamic entity that changes over time and over the course of the relationship, conflict can arise as it does in any close personal relationship. And if either the dog or the owner are unable to resolve that conflict, it may mean that the relationship isn't successful, and that's what could lead to the relationship failing and the dog being relinquished.
And Mia, is it more likely to happen with dogs from shelters where you don't know the background, or can it happen across breeds?
Look, from my experience, in the past I have worked in a really large shelter and been on the front line receiving these owner relinquished animals, and I would say it can happen to anyone. I've seen, you know, pedigree papered puppies being returned just because they weren't what people were going to expect. And in some ways, I'd almost say that, you know, where shelters and rescue groups are doing all that hard work to try and set up dogs and owners to be a positive match together, they are doing those sort of profiles for both the dogs and the owners and trying to marry them up. There's probably, you know, as good a level of success, if not better. But as Anna found, you know, it doesn't always work out. And individual dogs, you know, the problem when we tick boxes on a piece of paper is that it doesn't necessarily reflect the individual dog. And something like Mally, who's, and also this greyhound, they've come from fairly what we would consider deprived puppyhoods, where they've not had the best socialisation available to them for moving into a suburban life.
And Anna, let's move on to Mally's new life. How did you go about finding a new home for her?
So we put an ad up online and we were prepared to wait as long as it took. We were in no rush and we certainly weren't ready to palm her off to, you know, a kind of substandard living arrangement. And we, in fact, said no to about four or five people who got in touch with us straight away.
Why?
Because their living arrangement seemed too similar to ours. They were in a suburban environment, or they were they didn't seem to have someone home and active enough for it to be like a significantly different living arrangement from ours. And then the sixth or seventh person to get in touch was a man named Bill, who lived in a large property in regional Victoria, who said he was looking for a friend for his aging sheepdog and some company on long days out in the paddock.
And tick, tick,
tick. Tick, tick, tick. And did we want to come up and have a visit? And so we did. We got in the car and we drove up there, and we could tell straight away that this was a really good thing to do. A, because Bill was beautiful. You could tell straight away that he was a beautiful, gentle man and that he was very loving with his dog who was already there. And B, because Mally just was so happy straight away. She just started running around. There was a creek on the property that she could swim in. I think the property is something like 200 acres. So she had all the room in the world to just do what she was born to do, which is just run and run and run and chase birds and swim in the creek and not be in a, you know, in a quarter acre suburban block.
And you've got updates over the years, haven't
you? We do, yeah. So Bill is so beautiful that he texted us. For about a year, we got pretty regular text updates about what Mally was doing. She'd barked at a wombat and kept it out of the veggie patch, or she'd taken to the cows and started nipping at their heels, which is amazing because she'd never, you know, lived in a farm environment, we don't think.
Was that a good thing to do though?
Yeah, yeah, it was helping him. Yeah, he was good. Pleased. Yeah, he was helping him round up his cows. And that she was getting along really well with the other dog. And then the text kind of dried up, but actually I got in touch with him to let him know that I'd be, you know, speaking about Mally and where she's kind of ended up. And he asked me to say that, you know, just to say that he's just so happy that we chose his family to rehome, him and his wife to rehome Mally, and that they love her dearly. And he said something like, she's a cheeky little devil, but, you know, we couldn't imagine life without her. So it's pretty reassuring. He also said, come up and visit anytime, which he's always said all the way through. So it's a pretty delightful, you know, result for us.
It's a happy ending. I'm wondering, though, was it a difficult conversation working out how much to tell Bill about why you were getting rid of her?
No, because his living arrangement was so different from ours. So she was going to be an outdoor sleeping dog up there, which is where the other dog slept as well. You know, I think a lot of the problems that we had with her related to her lack of space and the fact that she would be, you know, we talked about this with him, and he said she's going to be out on the field with me all day long to come home and sleep. And it was a trial. We started as a trial, and if there'd been problems there too, we would have come and picked her back up, but there just never were. I think it's always worked very well for them.
And Mia, just finally, is this a problem about dogs and people, or is it a problem about having dogs in cities at all?
I don't know that we can paint it with such broad brushstrokes, unfortunately, although that would be nice and easy. I mean, as Anna said, she's got friends with working dog breeds that are living successful lives together with their dogs in the inner burbs as well. So I think the more we learn about dogs, the less able we are to kind of make big generalizations. We really need to treat them all as individuals, and that takes into account not just their genetic background, but also their experiences and their learning experiences as they've grown up. So it really comes down to that match between, I guess, owner and dog and the environment that they have to share together. And sometimes it works out beautifully, and sometimes, unfortunately, it's a bit of a mess.
Oh, and sometimes if you're really lucky, you get a second chance like Anna and Mally, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Mia, are there things you can do in the searching process when you want to bring a dog home to try and avoid this thing happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's easy, you know, it's easy to judge with hindsight and easy to look back at situations and say, oh, you could see that wasn't going to work out. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair. So I think, you know, definitely people looking to bring an animal into their home should do their research. They should look at things like the longevity of the animal, how long it's going to live for, what its exercise needs are likely to be. If it's an animal that's been with a rescue group or with a shelter, ask as many questions about that individual animal. Even things like talking to an animal behaviourist, which is an expert in animals and how they behave and how they interact with people, before you bring an animal into your home, especially if you've got kids, about the things that you can do to set yourself up for success. And they can give you advice, knowing that they're available after you bring the animal home as well. So there's a lot of support available. So a lot of people don't always recognise that. But it's also important to note that those kinds of support services do cost money, and not everyone has those resources available to them as well. So being as informed as possible, preparing yourself and the environment as much to set the animal up for success when they arrive, and then understanding that it will be a process of getting to learn to live with each other over time as well, and being prepared to seek support if it's not working out. And then if it's really, you know, not working out as it was with Anna, then accepting that that's an okay resolution as well, not feeling like you have to be stuck tolerating each other.
Like you said, it's a dynamic relationship. That's a wonderful way to think about it.
Yeah.
Mia Cobb, thank you so much for joining us today. And Anna Kelsey-Sugg, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks, Hilary.
Mia is a human-animal interaction expert who works at both the University of Melbourne and Deakin University. And Anna Kelsey-Sugg is an RN digital producer. I'm Hilary Harper. You're on Life Matters here on RN.